Hello and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Oksana Smerchuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news this week. Day of Remembrance or Victory Day? Ukraine's commemoration of the end of World War II, which took place over 2 days of public holidays this week, went through some moments of turbulence, reflecting the nature of changing relationships with loyalties and identity. Ukraine commemorated the Day of Remembrance and Reconciliation with its symbol of a red poppy on May the 8th. In solemn official ceremonies across the country, wreaths were laid at war monuments to commemorate those who died in war. May the 8th has been a day of remembrance in Ukraine since 2015. Then on May 9th, further marches and wreath-laying ceremonies were held. May 9th has been the traditional Victory Day in the Soviet Union. According to the Communications Director at the Ministry of Internal Affairs of Ukraine, Artem Shevchenko, there were approximately 1,700 such commemorations of victory over Nazism held across the country this week. Usually they were wreath-laying ceremonies and marches of veterans or, most likely, their descendants. In a number of cities, these events led to confrontations between right-wing nationalist organizations, recent war veterans, and participants in the Immortal Regiment marches. The Immortal Regiment marches began as a grassroots movement in Russia, where descendants of World War II veterans would carry their photos. The Immortal Regiment marches have been used as a vehicle by the Russian government to promote Russian expansionism. In a statement this week, President Poroshenko criticized them as an example of political speculation, exploiting people's feelings. There were clashes and scuffles during the marches in a few cities, most notably in Dnipro and Kyiv. At the march in Kyiv, about 20 activists from opposition groups were detained. They had protested and thrown potatoes, smoke bombs, and paint at the Immortal Regiment marches. In Dnipro, there were clashes between ATO veterans, who were veterans of the war in the Donbass, and Tituskas, which were athletic-looking young men, which the police may have facilitated. The following day, Minister Avakov announced that he had fired top police officials in Dnipro for the lack of control and management of the situation. There is an ongoing investigation. Visa-free European travel for Ukrainians. An important step has been made this week by the EU towards visa-free travel. On May 11th, the EU Council voted to endorse visa-free travel to European Union countries for Ukrainians. The visa-free regime is due to enter into force on June the 11th. This means that Ukrainian citizens who have biometric passports will be able to enter EU member states for up to 90 days during a 180-day period. As European Commissioner Dimitros Avramopoulos pointed out, the visa-free status is also thanks to Ukraine doing its part and pushing through reforms in areas such as migration, public order, external relations, and fundamental rights. Ukrainians celebrated by raising the EU flag on what is officially the highest flagpole in Ukraine, on Khortytsa Hill, in Zaporizhia Oblast. Sheremet case investigation continues. New information has appeared in the case of Pavel Sheremet, a Belarusian-born journalist who was assassinated by a car bomb in Kyiv in July 2016. A new documentary film has been made available by a group of journalists, Slidstvo.info, and the OCCRP project. One of the claims is that a former or current Ukrainian security agent was present when the bomb was planted. Ukrainian Interior Minister Arsen Avakov has said that authorities would interview the journalists and the agent in question in light of new information. The war. According to the latest information released from the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission, there has been an escalation of heavy weapons use over the last 3 months on the front lines of the conflict in the Donbass. The US envoy to the OSCE, Kate Burns, stated that the Special Monitoring Mission has observed a 750% increase in the use of heavy weapons on separatist-held territory. Last week alone, The special monitoring mission observed 44 weapons in violation of the previously agreed withdrawal lines, and 42 of those were on territory not controlled by the Ukrainian government. As well, the US envoy noted that there is a deliberate pattern of behavior by Russian-led separatist forces aimed at weakening the special monitoring mission and preventing the international community from observing separatist activities. This week, the chief monitor of the special monitoring mission condemned sexual harassment of special monitoring mission observers as one of the methods of obstruction. He cited an incident where an armed man intimidated an unarmed civilian female member of an SMM patrol by making comments of a sexual nature. The chief monitor stated that the OSCE monitors should be able to do their job without fear of physical or verbal assault. In the past week, there were attacks and firing of weapons in all areas along the front lines. The Ministry of Defense reported that in total, in Ukraine, 2 soldiers were killed in action and 31 were wounded. The case of Oleg Sentsov. It is 3 years since the annexation of Crimea, and this week it is 3 years since the arrest of Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov. He was arrested on politically motivated charges for his peaceful protest against the illegal occupation of Crimea by Russian forces. Today, he is still in a Russian prison, having been sentenced in August 2015 to 20 years of hard labor. He has been declared a political prisoner by international human rights organizations and has been the focus of a number of campaigns on his behalf. The US Penn Center, which is one of the largest Penn clubs in the world, has now taken on the case of Sentsov. He was the winner of their Freedom to Write Award this year, and a large campaign to free him is being planned. This week, the Ukrainian World Congress put out a call to action for Ukrainians and people worldwide to join the campaign. They urged governments to impose sanctions against those individuals responsible for unlawfully imprisoning Sentsov. And now, our feature interview by Bohdan Nahailo. This week, he's in conversation with Yevhen Bereznitsky, the founder of Kyiv Art Week.
Well, a lot is happening in Kyiv this week. We have Eurovision and the final approaching, and Kyiv full of tourists. But there's also another very important event for Kyiv, no less significant on the cultural scene, and that is the, if I'm not mistaken, the second Kyiv Art Week. It's a very impressive occasion. I was at the opening last week, and it's a very large-scale presentation on the level of the Tate Gallery that I was used to as a student day in my student days in London, of art not only from Ukraine but from all over the world. And I'm very fortunate to have with me in the studio today Eugene or Yevhen Bereznitsky, who is the founder of this project, concept, this event, this yearly happening. So welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about how this idea came about, this ambitious idea to have these art weeks in Kyiv.
Yeah, I would like to thank you, first of all, for inviting me here and also for all the compliments, which I barely deserve, but still they're very pleasing. It's not that we have invented the format, but we at some stage realized that Ukraine requires it, and we adopted. Since we do not have...
This is a group of friends, you, how many of you?
Team, it's a quite a small team actually. Initially there were only two of us, and then some people who felt that they might share the ambition, the mission of the project.
And your own background, you were involved in the art world beforehand?
Since 20 years already.
For 20 years already.
And it's a family business. And
Yes, your mother is a very famous collector and has had her art gallery, I think, in Germany.
Yes, we had different changes in format, but the gallery is in existence since.
And now Ludmila Bereznitska is a deputy in the Kyiv City Council.
Yeah, that's right. She's in charge for culture.
Okay, so we're very privileged to have you here, and from this background, so you're obviously well placed to tell us what's happening on the cultural scene. But let's stay focused on the Art Week.
Right. So we have adopted the format. We realized that we cannot just implement it as it exists in more developed art scenes, but we tried to do it on a low-key profile at the very beginning, because there were no public funding. There was only resources which we sought from our own pockets when it was the Kyiv Art Week 2016.
But that was for local artists, or were you already planning to have people from abroad?
We already, this project is normally consists of several parts, and the leading part is usually an art fair. And also, it combines institutions. So it's not an exhibition in a common sense. We do not work with artists. We support the institutions, which in their turn support the artists. So it's an institutional development project, as we see it. And it was targeting, of course, predominantly Ukrainian galleries, but we nevertheless understand that we don't want to be homogenic, and we really want to promote art from Ukraine outside of our country. And for that, we need to let in art from outside here, so that there would be an equal exchange.
A two-way flow.
Right, exactly. And once we open our hands to the world would be much more friendly to us. So, of course, in the first year, it was very difficult to involve foreign galleries, because it was a kind of a gamble for them. You go to undeveloped art scene without certainty that you're going to sell, and this is always a tricky action.
And probably also after Maidan and the Revolution of Dignity, was some fear.
Exactly. It's still there, but much less than the last year. Yeah, and considering that that was only first experience, nothing was there on the net about the project. This year it was much, much, much more easier.
Okay, stop. Let's go back. So how would you assess the first trial run, which also seemed very impressive from what I saw? I wasn't at it, but I looked at the photographs and read up about it. So what were the lessons learned?
That we really need to dedicate more efforts into the publicity, and we also require more resources, which we have to seek much more actively. And we also realize that this kind of project or the concept is requiring the significant support from the city, because it's targeting the city development, it's targeting the development of its reputation, its image, and the public cultural art sphere.
And was it a coincidence that you had it at more or less the same time as the Eurovision?
Well, in a way, it was done on purpose, because there was funding available within the portfolio of preparations for Eurovision. And the city has allocated the budget. And since they also understood that they would be barely able to give us something out of this budget, they suggested that we will take part in this portfolio. And we agreed, because it was more important to do the project on a higher level than to try to divide yourself from a popular format.
And the location is quite amazing. When I turned up there, it's a huge concrete building that seemingly is empty most of the time. And yet it was transformed miraculously into this amazing art gallery with its labyrinths and different types of art on show, from huge canvases to sculptures, etc. How many exhibits did you have altogether this year?
I didn't calculate exact number, but there were much more than 1,000 exhibits. And yeah, it was 23 galleries participating, and there were two special projects specially prepared and designed for the premises.
Galleries from which country? Can you
there
give
us five countries participating? Ukraine, Georgia had a very big presentation. There were galleries from Poland, Germany, and Brazil.
Not a bad start.
Right, thanks.
Yeah, and so even from Brazil?
Yeah, right.
Okay, and how many people were involved altogether?
You mean the team or...?
Well, both the team and how many were actually came as contributors, as co-organizers, as participants. I don't mean visitors.
Mm-hmm. Team is about 8 people. And also we had a lot of contractors which were involved, so... overall, it was quite a big logistically...
A nightmare.
Exactly.
Exactly. We don't have to be diplomatic.
Right.
I can just imagine, because the sheer size of it. I'll tell you frankly, as somebody born in Britain, I was very proud to be there. I really felt that this was a European event, a European project, not using that term loosely, because as I said earlier, it reminded me of my student days when I was familiarizing myself with the best of modern art, particularly in London, and then later in Paris and in Barcelona and whatever. And this really seemed to meet the standard. So congratulations.
I really appreciate your words.
What did you personally like from the exhibits? What were your favorite works?
That's a very tricky question, because I normally try to be very...
neutral?
Neutral, yeah. And what I must confess that I really liked a lot a video which was shown by the Polish gallery. I found it very disturbing but beautiful at the same time. And there was...
What was the theme? Can you tell us?
It was a beauty of death, in a way, because it was about the family, and where the wife is dying of cancer, but she's really struggling in a beautiful way.
So it's about dignity. It's not so much beauty, but the dignity that can be there in dying gracefully with family support.
Exactly.
Yes?
It was disturbing, but it was also very, very impressive. Probably the best artwork which I, for myself, has pointed out.
Okay, and have you any idea how many people came up to the opening and have subsequently visited the Kyiv Art Week?
Yeah, we kept statistics. So the opening was visited by 2,000 people on the evening. And then...
Which was what? Which day? About
it
the 5th, the 4th?
No, the
later.
Opening.
Yes, the opening.
It was Thursday, so the first day, yeah?
Yeah, a week ago, okay.
Yeah, and then we had 3 working days, and the overall number of people were just 10,000 around, roughly.
So not bad, not bad.
No.
And mainly young people or all generations?
No. What I found really pleasing is that we reached our goal, and we really found... The way to involve people who normally do not consume cultural products. We really made our best to show our will to be understood. And we even specially designed some parts of the exposition which would be really user-friendly, I would say, in a way that we allowed people to interact with art, which is normally not acceptable in museums or elsewhere, where there is a border between the observer and the artwork. So we allowed to touch. It's like, in a way, like, you know, cannibals eating the heart of the enemy in order to overcome the fear. And for most people, they're afraid of art, especially of contemporary art, because it's most of the time beyond understanding. And that's why people are reluctant to accept it.
Yeah. Well, I think your presentation was very much state of the art, you know. Now, tell me, from your perspective, Ukrainian art, very loosely, but let's say modern art, are we on the cutting edge? Do we lag behind? Where are we? Have we our own identity? Though we're talking about individual artists, but as a phenomenon, Ukrainian art these days, are we modern? Are we backward? Are we conservative?
We are pretty conservative, but we are good learners. And we, I see enormous progress, how we get on with really creating a new census. And this, actually, the Dignity Revolution gave us a lot of push to do so, to be more brave.
Is Ukrainian art, or let's say the works of Ukrainian artists, are they becoming better known outside of Ukraine? Are they becoming popular?
Yes, some of them. But unfortunately, this is mostly due to private initiatives rather than state support.
I mean, you know, we see, for example, in ethno fashion, Ukrainian products, Ukrainian designs are very fashionable, very popular. Do we have at this stage any artists that are becoming established in the West as trendsetters, as people to follow?
In terms of fashion design, yes.
There is, but art, painters,
art,
sculptors?
Fortunately, not as yet.
Because we also have authors that have made it in literature, like Kurkov and others, and Jadan and Zabushka, that are being translated.
Art is a little bit behind.
Okay.
Unfortunately, and we put in our efforts in order to change it.
Okay, so what lessons did you draw from this year's experience?
That we really need to work even more on communication between the society and the art, the art scene. We really need to marry them, because nowadays the art scene is very isolated area of social life. That we need to change.
I'm talking to Eugene Bereznitsky, the founder of Kyiv Art Week. Is this also a question of the economic conditions that the population faces, and I guess many artists also face?
Yes, but I also think that cultural development is a very important engine of economical development. Because in most advanced countries, well-developed countries, cultural industries are one of the most important industries.
Another question I wanted to ask you is, to what extent do we see any kind of national content or quality about the works that are appearing now? I don't mean en masse, but is there some reflection in the works that of the leading Ukrainian modern artists of a specific Ukrainian content? I mean, I allude to the 1920s when Boychuk and the others were happening, where they were trying to modernize art, but also inject some kind of Ukrainian content. Is there any subtle Ukrainian element that's brought in? Last week I was talking to a representative from the Dima Borisov chain, and they were explaining how he and his team are trying to make Ukrainian cuisine more sophisticated, more modern, in a very subtle way.
It's more, I think that it's more important not to show the visually recognizable signs of your traditional background, but translate your mentality. And this is much more important, because in this way you translate not your traditional values, but you actualize your culture. And I even think that for Ukraine it's a very important task to change the pace. We used to do a lot in terms of development of traditional culture, even in Soviet Union, to make Ukraine sort of conservative and a little bit disadvantaged country because of the slow pace when you're really thinking only about the history and the past, and really need to look into the future, not forgetting about the past, because we all came from the past, but we really need to actualize it.
Have the events of the last few years, the revolution of dignity, also found their way into the works?
Yeah, a lot. A lot. Artists, they react to the society changes, to all the social movements which are going around. And a lot of them were taking part in the actions, Maidan. But also plenty of them were working with the volunteers or with the fighters. Of course, they react to the reality.
Eugene, okay, what plans for next year? Same sort of scale, a bit more ambitious. What are you aiming for?
We aiming more visitors. We aiming more galleries participating, and we aiming more foreign galleries come, and probably more foreign content to the show.
Okay, and finally, so longer term, what is your vision for this project, Kyiv Weekly, to become an established feature on the European scene, respected, etc.? What's your personal vision?
We really want to make people from outside to come on purpose to this event.
To attract outsiders.
Not by chance that you came to Kyiv and found out in the media that something is on, but really to come on purpose.
So it becomes an established international event,
exactly.
A respected one. Okay, thank you very much, Eugene. I've been talking to Eugene Bereznitsky, who is the founder and a driving force behind Kyiv Art Weekly. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
And now for culture. This week, the big excitement is the Eurovision Song Contest. Ukraine is hosting. And there are a number of Eurovision zones to visit and see in Kyiv City. The most active being the concert venue on the left bank in the exhibition centre, where the competition itself is taking place. And there is also the Eurovision Village on the main street, Khreshchatyk, which has a high-tech stage set up with a large viewing area and is generally hopping with people most times of the day. There are games areas, places to take photos, kiosks where you can try Ukrainian food, stands selling souvenirs. And not to mention the coloured singing and dancing water fountains on Maidan Square, an attraction all in themselves. Messages about diversity are on billboards everywhere in the city, bringing the spirit of Eurovision closer to everyone. But towards the evening, people congregate closer to the stages set up on Khreshchatyk and other squares to watch performances of Eurovision singers. Despite all the excitement that has come to Ukraine's capital, there have been comments in the media that all this is not in keeping with the fact of an ongoing war and the sacrifices being made in Ukraine's east. However, these soldiers are not forgotten, as there is a billboard-sized photo exhibition on the Khreshchatyk of Ukrainian war veterans, who may have been wounded but are in training for the Invictus Games. As commentators have pointed out, it is thanks to those individuals that Eurovision festivities and events can be enjoyed by the thousands of Europeans visiting Ukraine this week. And now to our music selection. We have a song for you. This time it comes from the private collection of one of our co-hosts, Bohdan Mihailo, who owns a lot of Soviet underground amateur recordings from the 60s, 70s and 80s. This song was performed in the late 80s by Lviv singer Andriy Pancheshin. We're not necessarily big fans of satirical songs, but this one is a fitting tribute to Ukrainian achievements in foreign affairs. It is called Tvoroshchi Kasirki, Comrades Cashiers, and talks about how impossible it was to buy tickets for destinations outside the Soviet Union if you are a Soviet citizen. Those who lived in the Soviet Union will remember how it was and probably will even rejoice that Ukraine finally made its way out. Andriy Pancheshin, Comrades, Cashiers. Enjoy and please excuse the homemade quality of this recording.
товарищи косырки и косыры, вы сидите в амбразурах касс и здійснюєте мудре керівництво стихійною міграцією мас. Я поважаю ваш нелегкий труд, я від поваги мало не німію, але по простоті своїй, мабуть, я дечого чомусь не розумію. Полтаву, в Ригу, Владивосток, я виїхати можу без затримок, але мені не продають квиток до Лондону або, скажімо, до Риму. Мені, на вашу думку, не резон побачити Калькутту чи Суматру, хіба би влаштувався на сезон в кордебалет великого театру. Манять мене небачені міста, Венеція, Мапуту, Гонолюлю. Для всіх наївних відповідь проста: охайний запах пещеної дулі. Я дуже люблю чесних трударів і дар моїх різних ненавиджу. Невже ж я політично не дозрів, щоб пішки походити по Парижу? Ви кажете, там люди як вовки, там ЦРУ розставило тенета, піймають наче муху павуки наївного радянського поета. Але чому, скажіть мені лишень, громадянин великої держави, не можу завітати хоч на день до мало що не рідної Варшави? З дитинства маю мрію голубу побачити, як розцвіли банани, а ви мені придумали табу на пароплав до братньої Гавани. Ви кажете, не вистачає місць, наш пасажир здолає перепону, простоїть добу, може, навіть шість у тамбурі загального вагону. Якщо ж у поїздах такий аншлаг, що повні всі кльозети і підніжки, принаймні відновіть мене в правах, куди завгодно мандрувати пішки. Товариші касирки і касири, ви сидите у амбразурах кас і звідтіля розумними очима, не кліпаючи, дивитесь на нас.
And now, in looking forward, next week we'll have more stories and current events. Tune in for a new episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I'm Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.